Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we meet the Ritchie Boys as they pushed through Europe during World War II, and we'll learn about the readiness support groups for family members of our deployed troops. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
During the month of April, the state of Minnesota takes time to recognize the Month of the Military Child. The purpose of this special month is to emphasize the important role military children play while a parent or an important adult in their life is serving. We are learning from our children that a life for a military child isn't the same as for their peers. They have a unique set of pressures as their loved one is deployed. The children worry about a loved one in harm's way. They also endure extra stress both at home and in school when a parent is gone for extended periods of time. While many of our military youth are part of the Minnesota National Guard family and call a Minnesota community home, some have parents in the active duty or reserves and may face numerous moves as a result of their parents' assignments. The worry, stress, and moves all make normal childhood activities difficult. It is estimated that over 15,000 children in Minnesota have been affected by a parent's deployment. During the month of April, Governor Dayton will send a military child a letter of gratitude in honor of their service and sacrifice. I encourage all military parents to register their sons and daughters to receive a letter from the governor. It's a simple process that will warm the heart of your child and make them feel extra special for enduring their role in your military family. To register your child, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on the events and deals.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. During World War II, the United States had a group of interrogators that were referred to as the Ritchie Boys, and we have a member of the Ritchie Boys with us today, which was a group of U.S. soldiers, former refugees from Nazi-occupied Europe, most of them Jewish, who were trained to interrogate prisoners of war and exact as much military information as possible to hasten the Allied recovery. Joining us now is Walter Schwarz, one of the original Ritchie Boys of World War II. Walter, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Walter, I understand you were born in Romania.
Yes.
And you came to the United States just before World War II. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I was born in Romania, and I spent my high school years in Romania. But both my parents were originally from Czechoslovakia, and they sent me to a trade school in Czechoslovakia because they wanted, first of all, my father wanted me to be trained in textiles, which he was a hat manufacturer, and he wanted me to follow in his footsteps. But there was another reason. They were patriotic, and they wanted me to learn the Czech language, which in Romania, nobody spoke Czech. So they sent me to a famous trade school in Brno, Czechoslovakia, which was which is the capital of Moravia, and it's one of the finest textile schools in Central Europe. So that's where I went to school.
And that was until 1939?
Yes, on October 15th, 1939, Nazi Germany invaded Czechoslovakia without firing a shot. And on that day, the German army occupied all the main buildings and all the city hall and the telephone office and all the municipal buildings. And our school was made up of many Jewish students, And as I was, it was a Tuesday. I wanted to go to school just like on any other day, but the gate of the school was blocked by a number of young people with swastikas on their arms, and they didn't. They simply said "Juden raus." They didn't want any Jews in that school. The school was made up of many, many Jewish students, and they wouldn't allow any Jewish students into the school. So I didn't want to argue with them, and I was in no position to argue with them. So I left, and the Jewish students gathered in a park not far from the school, and decided what to do. And we were told to get away as fast as possible, as far away as possible. Well, my parents lived in Romania, and so it was not very difficult. I didn't have to make very much of a decision. I simply packed my bags and hopped on a train to go home. My home was in Romania. So it so happens I caught the last train that left Czechoslovakia, and I got home on that same evening. So
we're speaking with Walter Swartz, a World War II veteran on Minnesota Military Radio. Walter, then I assume shortly thereafter you emigrated to the United States?
Yes, my parents made frantic efforts to get away from Romania, because Romania was the next one to be invaded. Actually, it was Poland, but Romania was a country bordering on Poland, so Romania was in the path of the invasion. So we got away from there. Our ship landed, and my family happened to catch the last refugee ship that left Italy to cross the Atlantic to come to New York. And we landed in New York on April 1st, 1940.
Walter, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about when you enlisted in World War II and became one of the Ritchie Boys and went back to Europe. So this is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're speaking with Walter Swartz, who was a member of the Ritchie Boys, which was a U.S. Special Military Intelligence Unit in World War II, comprised of mainly German-speaking immigrants to the United States. Predominantly Jews, most of them had fled Nazi persecution. They were primarily utilized for interrogation of prisoners on the front lines and counterintelligence in Europe because of their knowledge of the German language and culture. Walter, when we finished the last segment, you had arrived in the United States. And how long after you were here did you enlist? How did you come to enlist in the Army?
Well, I, together with all other military age refugees from Central Europe, were anxious to get back at the Nazis. So many of us tried to enlist, but at that time, I was not a citizen, and they would not, the army would not accept any non-citizens at that time. So we had to wait until the draft started, which was after Pearl Harbor. That was in 1941. I think the draft started right there, and at that time, when the draft started, of course they didn't discriminate. They took anybody of draft age, whether he was a citizen or not. And I was caught in the draft, and I was recruited into the army at Fort Devens, Massachusetts. And our loyalty was never in question, because they could rely on these people who are anxious to fight the Nazis. They All those people spoke German, but their loyalty to the United States was unquestionable. So after I was in the army for a couple of months, I heard that the army was combing the military camps for people who spoke German. And one day my company commander called me into his office and said, Schwartz, you better pack up your bags, you're shipping out. And I was afraid. What did I do? I thought maybe I was being punished for something. No, it's not punishment. Just do what I said, and I'll tell you when you get there as to what the assignment is. So I packed my bag, and I dumped the duffel bag onto a truck. And overnight, the truck took me to up. This was in I was in Camp Pickett, Virginia, when this where I took my basic training, and the truck took me to Camp Ritchie, Maryland, which was the military intelligence training center, and of course the many of these they misnamed the training center as to MITC, Military Institute of Total Confusion, MITC, Military Intelligence Training Center. So that's where I landed, and that's where I received my training for to the intelligence service.
And your training at Fort Ritchie was, instead of confusion, was about you were trained in methods of intelligence, counterintelligence, interrogation, investigation, and psychological warfare.
Yeah.
After being trained in all of that, I think I'd be totally confused too, sir. How long did that training take, and then when were you sent overseas?
I think I was there for 9 months, and I received a graduation from the training center in August of 1944. So that was the war against Germany was in full swing, and actually D-Day was in June 1944. So I got to the I got to Europe in September of 1944, which was already, Paris had already been liberated, but I got in there when there was heavy fighting going on in northern France, and I saw some military action in northern France all the way to the Saar River. We chased the Germans across the Saar River, and at that time, and that became December of 1944, and that was when the Battle of the Bulge started.
We're speaking with Walter Schwartz, a member of the Ritchie Boys from World War II on Minnesota Military Radio. Walter, you were up at the area for the Battle of the Bulge. Tell us what happened up there.
Well, the Battle of the Bulge started very badly because the Germans caught us completely by surprise, and they came with heavy armor, and they divided, they split the forces of the British from the Americans, and that was some very heavy fighting. Now I got there pretty late when things started to get better. I got there when the U.S. Air Force bombed the Panzers, and then the tide turned back in favor of the Americans. So,
Walter, I understand there were approximately 9,000 young Germans and Austrians who were members of the Ritchie Boys. You were actually critically involved with helping the war effort in World War II with translation and interrogation, and you were over there right in the middle of it, along with everyone else helping us win that war, weren't you?
Yes, we were interrogating not only prisoners. I mean, that was the main thing, but we interrogated civilians too, farmers who knew something about what happened behind the German lines. And we found at that time we found them very cooperative. By the time I got there, I was very fortunate. The Germans surrendered in big numbers. Many of those German divisions came from the Eastern Front, from Russia. And the Germans were so scared of the Russians. In fact, they were told that the Russians don't take any prisoners, so you better fight or run, you know. So they ran, and they were told that the Americans treated the Germans pretty well. And so I was fortunate. I was one of the ones who received them when they were anxious to surrender.
Walter, most of the time when we think of World War II, we think about the Holocaust and all the Jewish people that were killed there. But it's nice to hear a story of 9,000 folks that were part of the Ritchie Boys that were over there helping with the war effort. What did you see in Europe? How did you feel about participating in that?
Well, by the time we... In May, when just before the before VE Day, the concentration camps were being liberated, and I saw the prisoners being released, and in fact, my unit came to be stationed in Czechoslovakia, which is, so I got to Czechoslovakia as on the victory side, when five years earlier I was being chased out by the Nazis. I came back to the same country in chasing the Nazis myself. So it was full circle for me.
Walter, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts about your time in the service with the Ritchie Boys in World War II?
The Ritchie Boys paid a very big price for their efforts, and many of the Ritchie Boys got killed in the effort, and I was very fortunate. I stayed alive, but they deserve a lot of credit for the final victory.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
This is Walter Swartz, a member of the Ritchie Boys of World War II. Let's visit this week's Supporter Troop Showcase and discuss how one woman with no military ties has been supporting deployed service members and their families. 3 years ago, Jeannie Lyons decided she was going to find a way to support service members. Her first idea was to adopt a deployed soldier and provide him or her a little taste of home. After linking up with the Cottage Grove Family Readiness Support Assistant, Jeannie got what she wanted, kind of. She wouldn't be adopting just one soldier. Jeannie was about to put together care packages for more than 90 soldiers. Undeterred, Jeannie and her young helpers, known as the Treat Bag Brigade, put together three themed care packages each month. Soldiers received treat bags for Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, even Cinco de Mayo. Before long, Jeannie was known as the Treat Bag Lady. Once the unit returned from deployment, the Treat Bag Brigade sought other service members they could help. Wasn't long before they adopted another group of soldiers. Within a short time, Jeannie volunteered to become the unit's family readiness group leader. Remember, she had no military experience. She said the company commander felt he was going out on a limb to have her serve as the liaison between military families in the unit. but after several months on the job, the commander had no doubt he'd picked the right person. Thank you, Janine Lyons, for your commitment to supporting service members and their families and going beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Find out how you can volunteer and support service members and their families across the state by clicking the Join a Yellow Ribbon Network button at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll learn about our Family Readiness Support Group programs. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to talk about the Family Readiness Support Groups. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalado.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is pleased to welcome Michael Gallucci as our new Deputy Commissioner of Veterans Health Care. Michael officially started with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs at the end of March. Michael recently retired from the Army as a Command Sergeant Major. His health care background includes the oversight of multiple hospital units and the coordination and administration of logistical and medical support to civilian and military personnel in Macedonia and Kosovo. For the past 3 years, Michael has had oversight for the transition and medical programs for the Wounded Warrior Program at Fort Gordon, Georgia. Michael's leadership abilities and experience in the healthcare field will position our veterans' homes for success in the years to come.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalado. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Carolyn Ashworth, who is the Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 1st Brigade Combat Team, which currently has over 2,700 members deployed to Kuwait. Carolyn, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning, Tom.
Tell me, what does a Family Readiness Support Assistant do to help the 1st Brigade?
Well, what the Family Readiness Support Assistants do, and we'll just, off the bat, we'll just call them the FRSAs, or the FRSAs if I slip up. The Army loves their acronyms, so, you know, let's just get that out, make things easy for us throughout the interview. So FRSAs, what their job is throughout the deployment is to really help those commanders build their family readiness programs. And that looks differently pre-deployment, during deployment, and post-deployment. But our job is really to look at what the true needs are of the soldiers and the families and to assist the commanders in building those programs so that their level of resilience is increased. That is the goal. And there are 12 FRSAs throughout the state of Minnesota, and the 1st Brigade Combat Team is using 7 of those to support the current deployment, which is, we're calling it an ideal model. There's no other model like that in the nation. So we are very lucky to have such a high level of support for the 1st Brigade Family Readiness Program.
Now, Carolyn, we've heard on the show before that when the 1st Brigade soldiers deployed, they had some family readiness training that involved the soldiers and their family, and there's some when they come back too. Can you tell us about some of those programs? What are they supposed to achieve?
Absolutely. The event that all of the soldiers and their family members attended prior to deployment was called the Family Prep Academy. And what that is each unit has this event, and all of the soldiers are required to go. They're also highly encouraged to bring their family members along. And family, when we speak of family in the world of family readiness, it could mean parent, it could mean spouse, it could mean close friend, sibling, child, anything like that, really anyone who is a loved one. And the soldier and their family member come to the Family Prep Academy, and they learn about resources that are available to them throughout the deployment. And they really just walk through, they go to workshops, they learn things about being fiscally responsible, communication. There was even a class on how to set up Skype on your laptop before you leave, things like that. It's really equipping them with the tools that they need to be successful throughout the deployment.
So very unlike 40 years ago when I went to Vietnam, they handed me orders, I jumped on a plane and left. Now we prepare for these deployments, and you prepare for the separations between the soldiers and airmen and their families, and hopefully they're better prepared and ready to handle the emergencies that come up.
Absolutely, that is the goal.
Now, the brigade's preparing to come home. What happens now?
Now what happens is, you know, they had the Family Prep Academy prior to deployment. Now we are starting to roll into our reintegration events, and we actually just held the first of those events in March. Those events were called the Family Reintegration Academies, and what's unique about those events is that it is only the family member that attends. You know, obviously the soldiers are still over in Kuwait, so they can't be there. So this is really the family member's opportunity to educate themselves on what to expect. So there were panels on what to expect. There was an assertive communication class that was taught on, you know, really addressing issues that are challenges during reintegration, a model on how to resolve issues, things of that nature, as well as a suicide warnings class that was revamped for the 1st Brigade families. And the events were incredibly successful. We continue to hear positive things about that. And those events were, we partnered, the 1st Brigade partnered with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon to host those events. Now, you know, as the soldiers start to get back, we are looking forward to our, what we call the 30 and 60 day reintegration events. And those are held in conjunction with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon again. And those will be in this upcoming summer, throughout the entire summer. On the weekends, soldiers will be getting together with their families. They'll be reunited with some of their units, and they will go through events that are very similar to the Family Prep Academies, but the topics are going to be focused on themes of resilience that are relative to the reintegration process. So the 30-day focuses on physical and mental resiliency, and the 60-day is focused on really building those relationships that are important in your life, that kind of stuff.
We're speaking with Carolyn Ashworth, Family Readiness Support Assistant on, Minnesota Military Radio. Carolyn, we had some folks on talking about the reintegration training and the academies and so forth. And sometimes it's as simple as while the soldiers of the 1st Brigade have been gone for a while, the families have learned how to live without them being there and at home. And now the soldier comes back and they expect everything to be just the way it was when they left. It's not the case, is it?
No, you know, I was in a class at the Family Reintegrations, the assertive communication, and that was one of the biggest issues that was brought up by family members. I taught the class 5 times, and it was brought up in every single class. You know, what is this going to look like when my soldier comes back, reintegrates into what is now our new normal? Our life does not look the same now as it did when they first left. You know, the soldier has been over getting training, building relationships, growing as a soldier. And the family members have been doing the same thing back here. They've learned to, you know, they've learned new skills. You know, they have mastered their carpooling route with no assistance from anyone else. You know, they're smart on resources that are available to them. And, you know, what that's going to look like is definitely a concern that is in the front of a lot of families' minds.
Carolyn, how big is that issue when they're in contact almost daily, either by telephone or Skype or on the emails? I mean, there's a lot more communication between deployed troops today and their families than there ever was 20 or 30 or even 40 years ago when I was deployed. Doesn't that make it easier?
You know, in some ways, it sounds like it is making it easier for them. They're able to address issues that maybe wouldn't be resolved as easily if they were having to wait longer periods of time between communication. You know, families, a lot of them are talking to their soldier every day, you know, whether it be a full-on phone or Skype conversation or email. It may also just be a quick Facebook chat. You're seeing a lot of that. People just checking in on each other's walls saying, you know, thinking about you today, miss you, you know. But I know families are able to address those concerns in a more timely manner. But also with that, you may not, families are reserving some of the issues that they would maybe talk about in person. They're not talking about them because they want to be cautious of the effect that that will have on their soldier. And talking about difficult issues is not always easy to do via Facebook or email or Skype. You know, you can't read their response as well.
So they're making nice and saving some of the bigger issues for later.
Yes. So when we look at that, you know, we say, you know, it's all about expectation management and communication. You know, you have to be asking those soldiers what to expect when they get home and what the families are expecting. And, you know, to be using all of these fantastic resources for keeping, you know, regular communication, use those to be working through some of these issues.
Carolyn, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the problems and some of the phone calls you get and some of the resources that are available to help help you help the families. This is the Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and joined today by Carolyn Ashworth, Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 1st Brigade Combat Team. Carolyn, we've kind of touched on everything, but we talked about training when before the soldiers were deployed, and we talked about the reintegration academies when they come back. A little bit about what's happened in between. That's where life happens, kind of. After the soldier left and before they come back, life for the families that whom you help all the time. What type of calls do you get? What type of things do they need help with?
Sure. You know, I'll never forget the first 2 weeks after all the soldiers left for their mob site at Fort McCoy. I had calls about 10 garage doors that had broken, which, you know, apparently had no issue prior to when their soldier left. So, you know, why wouldn't those break right after they don't have that person who would be able to assist? You know, the things that break, the things that need to be replaced, you know, the realization that, you know, okay, this is reality here. And, you know, we are now down to one parent for these kids. Or if you are a parent and your child is deployed, you know, maybe you're watching their son or daughter and you are having to adjust to that reality of, I have a child all over again. I know that is the scenario for some of the parents out there with children deployed. One of the stories that sticks out in my mind is it must have been about 10 days into the whole deployment, and I got an email from a wife who was frantic because she did not know how to cook. To the level that we're talking about, she was asking me how to cook a chicken breast. So this is not an offer for me to tell people, you know, I'm not offering my cooking services or instructional services. That's not what this is. But it's to illustrate the point that, you know, some of these basic things that you don't think about day to day, these are things that become issues. And, you know, you have to identify, you know, what am I going to be responsible for now? You know, you're the main person at the house, so you have to know how to cook. You know, it's not okay for your child to eat Lunchables every day for an entire year deployment. You know, you have to work through that and figure it out. And, you know, what is so neat to see is how that issue got resolved. You know, I picked up the phone as the person who got it, and, you know, I contacted her and let her know, you know, this is going to work out. You know, there are resources available, contacted her local Yellow Ribbon Network and the Family Assistance Center, and within hours, they had a dietitian lined up to help her create a menu. They had a chef to teach her how to cook those basic things. People that came right to her house. And, you know, this may be, you know, kind of one of those exceptional situations, but it just really shows you the level of support that's available in Minnesota and what happens when a family does reach out to communicate that they have that need. So that was one of the big ones that stuck out to me.
I think it's Murphy's Law says that as soon as the soldier deploys, things are going to break.
Absolutely.
I talked to the spouse of a soldier who had been deployed 12 times, and I asked her, how many times was there an emergency out of all those deployments? She said, every time. Mm-hmm. Something happened every time. And that's why you're there, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, the FRSA position, our job is to refer people to all the resources that are out there. And we are, you know, I hesitate to use the phrase subject matter expert, because I think that none of us have arrived there, but we definitely are savvy about the resources that are available. And our job is to train the family readiness group leaders on those same resources. So, you know, on a daily basis, we are pushing resources out to those volunteers and saying, hey, if you have family members who are looking for these, this is what's available. And we're also really pushing utilization of the family assistance centers. So, you know, I know the BCT has kept those family assistance center staff pretty busy throughout the past year, and they have offered excellent support to the 1st Brigade families.
We're speaking with Carolyn Ashworth, Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 1st Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Carolyn, let's talk about some of those resources. I know that you mentioned family assistance centers and some others, but what? Give us a laundry list. What kind of resources are out there? And there's a lot of them out there today that were never there 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But can you run through some of those for us?
Yeah, and Tom, you hit right on it. There are so many resources that are available that sometimes the issue for the family is, where do I even start? So just off the bat, I'm going to say, you know, for families or for community members who know of families that need some level of support, their first stop should be the Family Assistance Center. And there's locations, you know, across the state of Minnesota, and there's a 1-800 line that they can actually call to get that. And you can access that by going to beyondtheyellowribbon.org. All of that information is on there. So the Family Assistance Center should really be the first stop. And they are the one-stop shop for all of these other resources that are available. But it's things like military family life consultants, youth programs. It's Military One Source. You know, I'm sure I'm going to forget one here, but there are so many excellent resources out there that are there to support families throughout the deployment, whether it be through educational things like Military One Source partners with tutor.com to offer free tutoring to children. And, you know, we've seen examples of First BCT children benefiting from those and their grades going up, you know, skyrocketing through this deployment, which, you know, that can definitely be an issue if your parent who's deployed was the person who tutored that child on math. And to have a resource that can step in and fill that void is definitely something that is positive to see happening.
And we've had the family, Mike Farron from the Family Assistance Centers on before, and they have resources like gift cards in case you need some gasoline or food at the end of the month, and financial counseling in case you have a little budgetary problem. And of course, they can access the Minnesota Military Family Foundation for emergency grants if there's financial emergencies involved. So the Family Assistance Center is great. Do you also talk to the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon communities and help with some of those?
We do, yes. You know, the FRSA is day-to-day. We may interface with a family, an FRG, a community volunteer, community organization, veterans organization, and that's the reality of our situation. And a big part of what we do is looking at how we can connect with those yellow ribbon entities, and specifically those communities. And, you know, it means going to their monthly meetings and telling them, hey, this is the reality. This is what families are looking for, and taking back to information that they have, you know, hey, this is what we have to offer families, and sending that out to the families so that everyone is tracking what each other has to offer to each other.
It's a great issue. I've heard some of the Yellow Ribbon communities say, what is it? What do the families need? And how can we reach out to them? And it sounds to me like they reach out through you, the Family Readiness Support Assistance.
They do, yeah. And we, you know, we're really getting pretty smart at developing a system for communicating concerns. You know, if I get one from a family member, getting that right to Yellow Ribbons or to the Family Assistance Center or whatever that may be. So definitely, I am a huge fan of the Yellow Ribbon communities and have developed some really great partnerships with some of those organizations.
And sometimes it's just basic needs, mow the lawn, shovel the snow, babysit, say hello and visit and have a cup of coffee.
These are not big dollar items that families are usually needing assistance with. It's that everyday support that they are looking for.
Carolyn, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners about the returning 1st Brigade Combat Team and all the work you do to help the families?
You know, I would just say something to those looking to support families with returning soldiers. Give the families and their soldiers time. They are so looking forward to this return, and they need some time to begin that reintegration process. And just know that they will begin utilizing the services again, you know, once that honeymoon phase is over, because issues do come up during reintegration, and we want to assure the families that those resources are still available to them. So thank you to the soldiers for all that they've done over the past year, and the families for their sacrifice, but also to the Yellow Ribbon networks and all of the other resources that have provided support to the 1st Brigade families and soldiers.
Carolyn, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
It was Carolyn Ashworth, the Family Readiness Support Assistant for the 1st Brigade Combat Team in the Minnesota National Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Walter Schwartz, Carolyn Ashworth, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the upcoming annual ESGR banquet and we learn how to prepare care packages for troops. That's next Sunday morning at 7 or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.